In my estimation, there's three phases to a primary home breakfast. First thing you have to do is nothing. That sounds kind of funny, but it's harder than you think it is. Because we're all doing things that we're unconscious of. So the first thing you have to do is find out what you're doing that gets in the way of your own breathing. And then stop doing that. And that's harder to do than it sounds. So the first thing you do is just lie there and just watch your breath from a very objective as much as you can get objective about your own breathing, which is really not it's more of an idea than it is an actual thing that you can do. So you just watch and you look to see it's like you have to get some distance from yourself as a breather, because obviously you breathe all the time, right? You are breathing all the time, right? And it's hard to get a perspective of what you're doing with your breathing, because it's so natural to your life. So the first thing is just to step back as much as you can and just watch. But it's a witnessing watching. In other words, there's no judgment. You don't want to improve what you're doing. You don't want to change what you're doing. You just want to do what you're doing and see what that is. This is one of the prime uses of a pranayama practice, and that is to develop your own witness. And I think that's a very important thing to do. To be able to go through your day with your witness looking over one of your shoulders and watching what it is you say and do and think. That kind of observation of your own actions, of your own conversations, it doesn't necessarily make you a better person, but it makes you more aware of who you are as a person. And it's called the observer effect, and it can make you more conscious of who you are and what you're doing. I think that's, we were talking this morning about yoga. We don't talk about anything else. And, you know, there's a quote from a book by Sri Aurobindo. I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but it goes, all life is yoga. And I think that's one of the most important things about a training program like this, is that this is a preparation. All of your sitting during the day is your asana. All of your words during the day is your mantra. And the way to be aware of that is to develop your own witness. In yoga, it's called the sakshin.
Say again.
Sakshin, S-A-K-S-H-I-N, sakshin.
And it means what exactly?
Pardon me?
Sorry, can you just...
What does it mean exactly?
It means, well, I'm not quite sure exactly what it means, but it's interpreted as being the witness.
Okay.
It's a fair witness. It's not... It's a witness that's a very objective. It's just looking at what's there and nothing else. So I think the first thing you need to do is just watch as objectively as possible. Of course, breathing and consciousness are the same, two sides of the same coin. In other words, when you're watching your breathing, you're in essence watching your own consciousness. And by watching your breathing, it has a very profound effect. It potentially has a profound effect on your experience, your own awareness. So the first stage is to watch, to look. Then the next stage is to do whatever your practice happens to be during the day. Now, unfortunately, pranayama is more or less a daily practice. In order to develop the sensitivity that you need to watch your own breathing and to make it a substantial transformative element in your life, you need to really be able to look at it in a very profound way. I'm not sure that's the right word, but it's very important to develop a very sort of close understanding of your own breathing. It's potentially a very powerful transformative agent, your own breathing. And so, it's not a problem if you only do it once or twice a week, but it won't really make a big difference in your life, usually, just by doing it infrequently. So it's best you don't have to do a lot of it. You just need to have some connection in a formal sense with your breathing every day. So that's the second stage of the daily practice, to do your, to do what it is you're doing, and do your practice, whatever it is you decide to practice in the day. The third thing to do then, the third stage after that, is to go back to watch, and to note what effect your breathing practice has had on your consciousness. So you watch, you do, and then you watch. And the third stage then is to decide what happened during that breathing practice. If it was nurturing, if it fed you, or whether it was destructive, if it was not useful in any way. So I have to say that people have different experiences with their breathing practice, and oftentimes that experience is not very pleasant at first. My own experience, I started my breathing practice in 1982 when I started going to Iyengar Institute, and for the first few years it was very difficult because I was not doing it in a way that was congruent with who I was at that time. And you can push asana, you can do a vinyasa class or a sweat class, whatever you do around here, and you can push your asanas, but you can't push your breathing. It's very, very dangerous to do that. I mean, it's not going to kill you or anything, but it can create some very disruptive emotional experiences, and that's what happened to me. And I had a really difficult time for a few years, and until somebody told me to wise up and stop doing what I was doing. And of course,
that was me.
Actually, it wasn't. But you have to be very careful when you start a breathing practice at first, anyway, to see what it is that pushes your buttons. And
how were you? I'm just curious. How were you? What were you doing that was so dangerous?
I shouldn't say you. I'll say I had some issues unresolved at the time that are still. And my breathing practice disrupted those issues in ways that brought them to the surface. In unproductive ways, and the result was a constant headaches, irritability, frustration, things like that. I used to have a calendar on my wall, and I'd make a blue dot on every day that I had a headache, and to keep track of what that was like. And I had blue dots all over the calendar. I had headaches a lot. I went to my meditation teacher at the time at the Iyengar Institute to ask her for help. She took me down to Santa Cruz to see Baba Hari Das, the silent yogi. And he told me to stop, told me to quit for 3 months. And of course, I knew better than him, so I didn't. I just kept going. You ever talk to somebody that doesn't talk? He'd take a vow of silence. He'd write his answers out on a little blackboard that he wore around his neck. Very odd.
Do you guys know about Baba Hari Das?
No.
His guru gave him a, what do you call it, tapa, really?
I don't remember. I don't know.
It basically is, and he gave him something to practice. His practice was to be silent for 25 years.
Wow.
But when we met him, he had gone on to 36 years because he just decided, and he became an incredible sort of spiritual.
He attracted a lot of people. Mount Madonna.
It's still there in Santa Cruz. Yeah, his center.
It's pretty rigid. Anyway. I shouldn't have said that.
Sorry.
Baba Hari Das.
Okay.
So you're suggesting that if you're having physical pain, because transformation is often really tough, right?
Absolutely. It's not so much physical, psychological disruption. You have to be careful, and you have to stop immediately. You have to stop immediately when you start to feel some disruption in each individual session. It'll happen every now and then, but if it happens continuously over a period of time, then it's time to talk to Rodney or Colleen about what's going on. You need some help.
But sometimes you need outsiders to tell you that you are that way. So Colleen and I have been each other's pal in some ways about saying, I think you should change your practice. Because a lot of times you won't notice or you won't care that you're getting irritable.
And today I've been asked to do racial. Yes.
What kept you going if it was so painful for so long?
I'm stupid and stubborn at the same time.
But what were you searching for? What were you seeking?
I wanted to be a real yogi, and in my estimation, being that included a regular pranayama practice. Hatha yoga, I might have mentioned this already, was pranayama before the 20th century. Mm-hmm. I mean, the asanas, we can get into this later, but the asanas were essentially preparations for sitting and breathing. Mm-hmm. Early on, we'll talk about this afternoon.
So ratio breathing.
Yeah, ratio breathing. So there's two basic ratios in modern yoga practice. The first one is even ratio, samavritti, S-A-M-A, you brought up the word samakonasana the other day, but the sitting position, sama means, it's a Sanskrit root of the English word, same. So the same ratio, vritti in this context means ratio or count or whatever. So there's samavritti pranayama, and that's equal ratio, and that's what you start with. In other words, if you inhale for four counts, you exhale for four counts. And the other one is called Vishamavritti, which is unequal ratio. And the classic ratio in that one is, for every one count of inhale, you do two counts of exhale. Now, I don't want to take too much time doing this, but I just want to explain that and usually when you go to when you do something like that, somebody gives you a number. Do this and then just keep doing this over and over and over again. I don't believe that's the way to go. I'll give you a low number to start with. Usually it's like four. Inhale four, exhale four. Okay? And you do that for a few cycles to see how that feels. And if it feels good, if it feels okay, if it feels like you can manage more, then you go five and five and six and six. And you build on that very low number until you find the number that suits you best for that day. The same thing goes for Vishamavritti. Four and four, you start out with equal ratio, and then from there you go to four and five, four and six, and each time you increase the exhalation, you wait to see what effect that has on your consciousness. Four and seven, four and eight, and there you are at one and two. Is that clear?
And this is where it absolutely does not pay off to be stubborn. If you actually are finding out that it doesn't feel good, you need to back up. And if you can do that, you can do these practices. If you can't do that, you need a teacher. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so it's very different from what he's saying. Also, it's very different from asana. If you push asana, you might pull a hamstring or injure your knee or something like that. What he's saying here is it's more dangerous to your life in some ways, in the way you are in the world, if you push these things. He just gave you three aspects of the pranayama. Do nothing.
I'm good at that.
So, really, look how he's building this. He doesn't want you not to do it, but he's giving you precautions, even in his own story, to say, this is stuff that you have to absolutely be more careful with.
Yeah, especially with your own students. I teach pranayama in every class that I teach, whether it's beginning or intermediate. And I think it's really important that people who come to a yoga class already know that they're going to do some breathing during that period. And so, but every now and then you get somebody goes, gee, that was a great class, but do we have to do all that breathing at the end?
Yeah. So it's same breath?
Samavritti.
So it's equal
ratio.
Nothing, and then equal, and then varied.
Well, you don't necessarily have to do ratio breathing at all, but yeah. A lot of people, not a lot, but it's not uncommon for people to have problems with counting. They feel like it's a distraction. So there's other ways to do that. But anyway, I don't want to take too much time talking. We have an
experience.
We need to do it. Yes, go just quickly then. Sorry.
So you talked about the benefits of daily practice.
Yes.
So what is the benefit of introducing it to a beginner class when the person's only going to do it once?
It gives them the idea that it's necessary to I mean, you're not going to make every student that come through the door into a pranayama fan, but you give them the opportunity to know that it's important, and that's your job as a teacher.
Let's keep question answers till later, because he should give you a little experience.